You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
This week's bits. The best news nuggets from Breakfast and The Wire from this week.
Atamaria, good morning, Kohana Ross, Toku Wingawa, and welcome to this week's bits. This week, a lot went on with the Green Party as the party's AGM happened and the proposed families package was announced as well. As well, co-leader Matiria Tude was in a bit of turmoil by admitting that she had committed benefit fraud back in the day. On Monday, co-leader James Shaw spoke to us regarding the party's AGM and families package announcement.
It was a really big weekend for us because we had two major announcements that we're laying out for the election campaign. So on Saturday, I put out the announcement, or the commitment, that we were going to make New Zealand carbon neutral by 2050, which is actually an eye-wateringly ambitious target, right, to get to net zero greenhouse gas emissions. And then on Sunday, just while we're making ambitious announcements, Matiria Tude, my co-leader, announced that we are going to put in place a plan to end poverty in New Zealand. So doing our bit on climate change, ending poverty, it's been a big weekend.
Yeah, two very ambitious goals. For the first one, climate change. So how do you plan to go about that?
On Saturday, I announced a billion-dollar fund to invest in green infrastructure. So those kind of, you know, those things are going to underpin the green economy and to get us there. That includes renewable energy, particularly geothermal, energy-efficient building materials and building retrofits, housing retrofits, that kind of thing that helps to just, advance the economy, but also pull carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere.
Mm. That $1 billion, where do you see that coming from?
So $100 million of that will be government money. We're basically going to set up a new fund, a bit like the Kiwi Bank, right, of the green economy. And the idea is that it costs about $10 million just in startup costs, but then we'll extend them a $100 million line of credit. And then the rest of the money we're anticipating coming from the private sector. And that is, we know that there are banks in Australia and the United Kingdom and six different United States in America, places like Hawaii and Connecticut and so on, where their experience is that for every dollar the government puts in, anywhere from $3 to $10 comes in from the private sector, depending on how it's structured.
Right. All right. And then on Sunday, Matiria made her announcement, of course.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a biggie.
Yeah. So one of the big things from that is the families package. So do you want to talk a little bit about what that kind of entails?
Yeah. I mean, the basic design here is what we're saying is that if you actually want to solve poverty in New Zealand, there's always going to be poor people, right? But if you want to lift the roughly 250,000 New Zealanders and children who are living in poverty above the poverty line, then what we're looking at is the most comprehensive reform to income support and the welfare system in 30 years, right? So it's a really massive package, and it involves changes to the tax system, it involves changes to working for families, to the in-work tax credit. There's a lot of different facets to it, but one of the features, for example, is that we would change the abatement rates. So at the moment what happens is you get sort of working for families support up to a certain level, and then beyond that level it drops off really quickly, and so you're actually paying a effective marginal tax rate of about 85%, which is a massive disincentive for people to work. And so what we're saying is actually you should remove that disincentive and say, look, it's actually good for people to be in work, you want to encourage that. And so we're basically dramatically simplifying the welfare system, which should also strip more cost out of it, which means that you can return more of that to the people who need the support.
He then also spoke to us about Matiria Tude's announcement about how she lied to Work and Income about her living situation in order to receive higher benefit payments. Tude told Wins she was living alone with her daughter, despite having flatmates to help pay the rent. Shaw explains her reasoning on why she announced this information at this time.
Well, Matiria is now one of the only people in the country who has been in that situation, who has the mana and the status to be able to come forward with that kind of story, right? anybody else is in a way more vulnerable situation than she is in. And what she wanted to do was to illustrate just how punitive and just how broken our income support system is. Because what she's saying here is that you've got good people, single mothers, honest people who are trying to lift themselves out of poverty into greater opportunity. And you've got to remember, so she was a single mum on income support, but also she was studying for a law degree. Right, she was working her butt off to get herself out of the circumstances that she was in. And ultimately, she succeeded. But she just could not make ends meet. And so, you know, what she's saying is that the system that we've got is so punitive, it turns good people into liars. And that is what is broken about the system. And so telling that story, I think, was incredibly brave. And I'm frankly very, very proud of her for doing that, because we know that there are so many people who are in absolutely desperate straits, and they are being kept in those situations by the welfare system, by the system that is there to, you know, theoretically support them out of poverty. It actually traps them in it and turns them into liars and criminals.
We then spoke to lawyer Graeme Edgler about the Taxpayers Union invoicing, Green Party co-leader Matidia Tude saying she must pay back the money she stole from taxpayers before she can have any credibility as a member of parliament. They put the figure at $57,000, but Edgler says that number doesn't add up.
This seems exceptionally unlikely to be correct, in my opinion. What Matidia has said she's done is claim too much in the accommodation supplement. She told Wynne she was paying a certain amount of rent, and then, you know, someone else moved in and suddenly her rent has gone down. And so that would not affect the amount of the domestic purposes benefit she was receiving. It would only affect the amount of the accommodation supplement she was receiving. And in 1993, the maximum accommodation supplement was $50. If Matidia was getting that, you know, it might have been $20 or $25 that she got too much a week. So unless she was doing this for, in 15, 20 years, it's not going to add up to $57,000.
Where did you get those figures from, the figure of $50 a week?
I looked up the legislation that was in force at the time. The accommodation supplement was first created in 1993, which is around the time this was happening, and the maximum amount for the accommodation supplement for someone living in Dunedin was $50. It was slightly higher in Wellington and Auckland. But Dunedin and the rest of the country, the maximum amount you could get as a single parent with children, or at least a single parent with our child, was $50.
If it does turn out that $57,000 is too high, are there any potential consequences for the Taxpayers Union for coming out with an incorrect figure?
Probably not. You know, Matidia is a politician who has admitted, in a sense at least, to possibly committing a sort of some level of benefit fraud. They've said exactly how they calculated. They basically took the DPB now and said, you got the DPB for 3 years and this is how much it was. They're wrong. I think they know they're wrong, probably, or at least. But they've been clear about how they've calculated and why they say she owes that amount of money. Matidia is a politician. You know, she can take that sort of criticism, I would have thought.
And I see that she has come out and said, if she is investigated, which she sort of expects to be, that she will pay it back. How easy would it be for the government to sort of look back and work out how much she did owe?
Well, it's not necessarily all that easy. I mean, the question, a lot of the documents that they have, you know, how much did she claim at the time? How much did she say her rent was? When did her rent come down because someone else moved in? All sort of questions like that is, I can't really remember what my rent was 10 years ago. I doubt she can remember what her rent was, you know, 23, 25 years ago.
We then spoke to the executive director of the Taxpayers Union about Edgler's concerns with the figures and our own calculations, which showed the figure to be much lower. It started by asking how the union got to the $50,000 figure.
Well, the $57,000 is an equivalent of 3 years in today's dollars of the DPB back in the early 90s. It's clearly not going to be an exact amount to what Matidia Tude actually owes the taxpayer, but it's a starting point because she's obviously admitted that she defrauded the taxpayer, she lied for 3 years, putting aside the moral question of whether she was justified at the time. Now that she earns close to $250,000, she's a senior MP, she's in the top 1% of income earners, we're simply saying pay it back.
Now, you've said that you've
calculated this based on the whole of the DPB, as if she had unfairly claimed the DPB itself for 3 years. However, what she's admitted to doing is to not declaring to WINS when other people had moved into the house she was living in and were helping to pay the rent. So, which would actually make it an accommodation supplement issue, wouldn't it? Why have you used the whole DPB?
It's a starting point. You know, this isn't a small amount. Tohinere admitted in 1999, I think it was, that he was overpaid by WINS. Within 48 hours, it was paid back, but that was only $47. This is clearly a heck of a lot more. And as we say, it's not good enough for Materia Ture to say she'll pay it back if she's asked to, or if there's an investigation by WINS. She knows right from wrong. She illegally took this money. She should pay it back.
We spoke this morning with Graham Edgler, who has said that the maximum level of accommodation supplement in 1993 was $50 a week. So we found a WINS document which said that a single parent with one child, as Matidia was, if they were paying market rent of $100, they'll be entitled to a $22 accommodation supplement. So we've done some calculations, adjusted them.
That's not quite right, because of course there's the implication that she's also not declared the income. So it's actually a
what income?
Well, the income from...
from the additional beneficiaries?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, beneficiaries, from the additional flatmates.
Correct. So there's a lot of unknowns here, and the person...
But sorry, what would her declaring that income have to do with anything? Did she own the house that she was living in?
No, that changes her taxable income.
Does it though? I mean, if she was living in a rental property, and she would just be that's the landlord's taxable income.
Well, no, if she's subletting it, see, it depends on the circumstance. I mean, for example, if she was in a Housing New Zealand home and was subletting it, then that opens a whole new can of worms. I mean, the problem we have is this: is that Materia Ture is in the best position to answer these. She can very easily file a request under the Privacy Act to find out all these details, and it wouldn't be hard to calculate the precise amount. The problem is she's been an MP now for, what is it, 15 years? And she's been on in the top 1% of earners over that time, and yet she's failed to lift a finger. The moment that the story is about to rear its ugly head, because there were people shopping this around over the last few weeks, she's claiming to take this moral high ground by front-footing the story and getting it out there. Well, that's just ridiculous.
But I assume that it was going around in the last...
We've worked out a figure. You can dispute it if you want, but that's absolutely fine, and maybe she wants to. But she should shine some more sunlight on this and pay the money back. That's what we're hearing from our tens of thousands of members and supporters.
Absolutely, you know, we can dispute the figure as much as we like, but I do think that we are heading towards, I mean, you cannot possibly say that Matidia getting extra rent from people affects her taxable income. I mean, there's no, you know, we don't know that she was owning a house. That's not, I mean, my taxable income doesn't go up because my rental property leases in my name and my flatmates pay rent for that. I mean, so I just think that the figure of $57,000 is a very eye-catching, very grabbing figure. We've done a calculation that says that if she claimed the maximum amount that she wasn't entitled to, which is unlikely because she would have been entitled to most, some, all of it at various times in these 3 years, that if she had claimed $50 a week she wasn't entitled to for 3 years, adjusted for inflation, it would be $36,000. I'm just saying that the methodology that you've used in terms of calculating this is quite misleading, and I'm wondering whether or not the Taxpayers Union is worried that they may face some sort of defamation action.
Not at all.
Political commentator then spoke to Mikey on BFM Breakfast about how Matidia's actions should be taken as a warning that benefit levels are not sufficient for people to survive and support their families on.
The crucial point that Materia Ture was making was, in the priorities in my life, my first one was making sure I had enough money to feed my kid. Now, if in the course of needing to do that, I might lie, or I might not disclose something, I was prepared to do it. And the point she was making was, she's a lawyer, she was training as a lawyer, she recognises the rule of law, she doesn't want to break the law, but she could see that in the priorities she had, she had to break the law, or bend the law, depends how you want to look at it, in order to meet the principal priority, which is make sure she could feed her child. Now, who the hell wouldn't put their child first what we've got as a problem, and what she was demonstrating as a problem, is the welfare system isn't good enough to take care of people who are in that position. And if we've got to fix that, not go after people who are deemed to be lawbreakers because they've put their child first.
Then Matt Ducey from the National Party also spoke about this issue.
Yeah, I mean, it is disappointing because what you didn't include in your narrative also was that she was actually studying law. So I suppose part of the money she was accessing from the government was being used to upskill. And then she went on to reap the rewards of that, of probably gaining better work outcomes from being qualified. So I think and the average New Zealander, in fairness, would say, you know, it's pretty disappointing. There's calls for her to remedy that in a range of ways, and I think that's a personal decision for her.
So Materia Ture was a single parent at the time that she was studying, and there's been a lot of outpour of support of people admitting they've been doing the same just to survive because they do not have enough money with the income they're getting from wind, to feed their children. And they said the difference between lying and not lying is the difference between getting your children lunch or not. So do you not think it is a reasonable thing to do, given that she was a struggling student trying to feed her child at whatever cost?
I didn't experience those conditions back then, so I can't speak of the proportionality of what a sole parent was getting then versus the opportunities that they might have now. But
it's something that people have said is happening now in today's time. So surely that means that there is a sort of systematic problem with the amount of money that parents are getting from WINS to support their children. It's clearly not enough if people are having to lie. It's clearly a systematic issue that needs to be addressed, don't you think?
I don't know how many parents are saying that they're lying today. What we do know is that we have the lowest number of sole parents on the benefit in the history of New Zealand. Most sole parents I know are actively out there working hard and bringing up their kids. How someone chooses to act morally is probably not for the role of the government to somewhat get involved, and I suppose if that person chooses a pathway, then in fact they open themselves up to the consequences, and only that individual can decide.
Right, but it's not about opening yourself up to consequences or anything like that. It's about being in a position where you don't have the work and you don't have enough money to feed your family, and you have no other options to feed your family than to do that, don't you think?
That's not my experience being a member of parliament.
But it's the experience of the people coming out and admitting these things.
Coming into my office saying that to me. In fact, the opposite, where most are coming in saying that they've been able to access jobs and provide for the family. So,
right, so you don't think there is a systematic problem with the benefit in the way that single parents do not have enough money to feed their families from the money they're receiving? You don't believe that's a problem from the stories you've heard and your arbitrary experiences with that?
Yeah, I mean, when you look at the range of opportunities available now, whether it be free GP care for under 13s, free early childhood education up to 20 hours, there's a range of things available to people. And I would just encourage, if anyone finds themselves in a position where they feel like things are getting on top of them, that is a role an MP can play about working with them around their entitlements and helping to make things better in their lives.
That was this week's Bits. To listen to the full interviews, visit 95bfm.com and check out the BCasts.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/BCasts.